I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And Jen, you just cheered me up. I was really depressed and you cheered me up.
I did. I told you some very off-the-record stories.
But they worked.
They worked. Well, listen, what I was saying to you is like, you know, when you work from home and you work for yourself, it's like really, you can get really in your head. It's really hard to like, to keep perspective going, you know? You need those like weird small interactions with people that just sort of like take you out of your own brain every day, I think.
Yeah, you really do. You really do. And I really miss having a lot of those interactions.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I used to think of them as such a waste of time when I would like, remember Betty, the receptionist?
Yes, Betty, okay. The receptionist from Glamour magazine.
Oh God. Okay. So Betty was like, I don't know, is 75 if she was a day. I don't like, she was an older woman. She had white hair. She always wore like elaborate scarves. And she would like, sometimes I would see her like sort of dancing outside of the Condé Nast building with the scarf. Like she was zany, but she had the most like glowing, lovely energy of anybody in the Condé Nast building. She was just like a beam of light.
She would say that when she died, because I think she died, or when she was fired, because they have at one point fired all the receptionists at Condé Nast. Remember
yeah,
that?
They just had ghost desks on each floor.
Ghost desks on each floor. But apparently Betty was famous because she would sometimes, if she felt like a promising young man was calling one of the female editors and she was excited about it, she'd actually leave her post and go to the person and say, "There's a young man on the phone for you. He sounds very nice."
No, she was a delight. And like, that's the thing about offices, like where so many of us are working from home, like you just don't get that kind of energy. Like I am going on an offsite next month to meet all of my coworkers. I don't know what we're going to do. I've been promised there are no trust falls, but like, I can't wait. I can't wait to see these people in person. I haven't met anybody that I work with in person. I had like 7 interviews and I interact with these people every day and I have no idea what they're like.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird.
It's weird. I mean, the legacy of COVID, like the way that it has changed workplaces is a real thing. And I think that, you know, we were talking last week about COVID and the gifts of COVID, but that has been a really tough thing for a lot of people. You know, it's great that, you know, there is a more open mind around remote work, that you can live anywhere and work and, you know, work for a New York company or an LA company. But God, I really miss seeing people like that.
I miss seeing people. And as we've just like, I have to force myself to have interactions with people. And I do. And like tonight I'm having like a drink with a writer and I'm already like, because you get out of practice. I'm already like, oh God, I have to go out. And I have know. Like three things I have to go out to this week. And I'm like, oh fuck, not fit for human consumption. And like, that is a thing that happens. And the thing is, what it can lead to is a real mental health spiral, I think, because you really start losing perspective on yourself, your place in the world, you know, who you are, if you're bad, if you're good, everything.
Yeah, it's true. You're 100% right.
Because we get information from other people. It's so important. And like, even like you're really nice to the person in the deli and like the person in the deli is really nice to you and you get a charge off that exchange, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, I feel that way about like, I mean, when I lived alone, there were stores I would go into.
Yeah.
You know, and having a relationship with the people in my neighborhood stores was like a thing that meant something on days when maybe I wasn't going to see anybody all day.
Yeah, we are a relational species. Like we are, you know, I'm right now reading Glynis McNichol's book, an early copy of I'm Mostly Here to Enjoy Myself, which is about her month in Paris after the pandemic when she just went to Paris and she just like had sex with a lot of French men and like ate cheese and like just felt like was just around people all the time and was just sort of soaking up pleasure. Like we are not supposed to be isolated and the result of COVID is that a lot of our work still is very isolated. And I love it, but I also know it's not great for me.
No, I agree. It's been a weird thing.
It's been a weird thing. So, what we should say is we're 5 minutes into this. I've been trying to make the show more professional, not in any way really, but I do think our guest did today. What you come here for is we are talking to the amazing podcaster, like really the queen of podcasts, Jane Marie. I was very intimidated to have her on. But Jane Marie has made so many amazing shows, including The Dream. And there's three seasons of it. And it's all about scams and how women particularly get scammed. And I think her work is so, so cool and smart. And I don't know. I'm really interested in how like, could I be scammed? Like, I'm always And like, yes, I probably could.
Oh, I think I could. 100%.
Yeah. Depends on what they were selling, man. It really depends.
Yeah, no, it does. I think I would be pretty susceptible. But yeah, it was a great episode.
It's a great episode. We can get into it. Oh, I should say, I launched a Substack last week. I actually fucking did it. I actually did it. I couldn't believe it. I set it up. And I'm going to try to do it consistently. So if anybody wants to head over to it, it's at I'm at jenromolini.substack.com, which I'm going to tell you again at the end. So let's get into the episode. Our guest today is Jane Marie. Jane is a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, a former producer of This American Life, the host of the acclaimed podcast The Dream, and more recently, Dear Jane Marie, and the co-founder of the podcast studio Little Everywhere. Her first book, Selling the Dream, The Billion-Dollar Industry Bankrupting America, which was based on the first season of the podcast, came out last month. You may also know Jane as a former columnist at Jezebel, The Hairpin, and The Toast. Welcome, Jane. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. I feel so stupid, like interviewing you on a podcast. I feel like I'm cosplaying as a podcast host. Like, I'm just like, okay, here we go.
No judgments over here. And just don't let me take over. That's the thing.
Oh, no, we want you to take over.
You know, if I start producing this episode while we're going, like, that's a cut. That's a, you know.
that's all I fucking want, Jane. Just do
it. Sounds amazing. Okay.
Make us professional, please. Okay. So listen, let's get into your book. Cause as I just said to you, I could talk to you about a million things, but I definitely want people to read your book because your book is great. It's smart. And it's a book about business. That's totally not boring at all. Like, it is, right? You know, and anyways, can you tell listeners who may not have read the book yet, what MLMs are and why you wanted to go so deep on them?
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to plug this thing. It's funny because I started getting on Beach Reads lists recently, and I'm like, it's about pyramid schemes. Like, what?
I saw that you were on a beach read list and I was like, okay. I mean, it does. It is fun and sexy. Yeah. Okay.
I've had to rethink it, that it is funny and sexy and weird. So it's about multi-level marketing, which if you've ever heard of a multi-level marketing company, it's probably something like, I mean, we've all heard of Avon, Mary Kay, Herbalife, the big ones. There's so many now, though, that are like popular in different parts of the world and country.
Yeah.
And I can't keep up with it, which is partly why we wanted to write the book. Because at the end of the first season, look, I made a show that isn't easy to make.
Yeah.
That takes a very long time to create because it's heavily written, heavily reported. It just takes a lot of manpower and time. But when we got to the end of the first season, it was like, we could keep talking about this forever. If only Jane had made a weekly talk show,
yeah.
Which isn't what I did.
Right, right.
So we had all these stories kind of left over, or corners of stories that we touched on that I wanted to go a lot deeper on. So that's what the book is. It's about these multi-level marketing companies that your friends hit you up to join saying, you don't need any experience. It's only $99 and you can have your own small business. That bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I couldn't believe your statistic that 99% of people don't make any money from these companies. And it's mostly women getting suckered in, right?
Mm-hmm. They mostly lose money, if anything. Yeah. And it's, I think, 74% right now, women involved in MLMs.
Wow.
70% of all women?
74% of all the MLM participants are women.
Oh, is women. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I guess it's like 1 in 5 people have done one at some point. So that's a lot of women.
Yeah.
And that's by design. You know, they target certain populations, marginalized populations that have a lot of hope and not very many resources.
Right.
Yeah. And I heard you talk about it. Like I watched you on The Daily Show and, which by the way, you were so good in The Daily Show. And you also were.
Give me a job on TV.
Somebody. Exactly.
No, you don't have any money.
You exactly.
I don't. That's the other thing we can talk about. Like my podcast is very well known and I wrote a book and I'm broke. Because you can't make money.
I know. And you're so prolific. You do tons of shit. You're always making shit. I know. Well, same.
Because I don't have any money.
Same. People are always like, you're such a go-getter. And I'm like, I have 8 jobs.
Yeah, for things that make no money.
Exactly. But wait, so I saw you on The Daily Show and I thought this was so interesting because what you were talking about was like, of course this is alluring. Like, of course we get to a certain age and you're like, oh, wait, I could make an extra $1,000 to $2,000 a month. Like
playing with makeup with my girlfriends?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can totally. There's never been a point during my reporting where I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Like, I've never felt that way.
Yeah.
How is it that there's been so much reporting on this and people are so aware of the brands that are most well known for it that it's still so prevalent?
Well, that was another big question we have still not quite answered. I mean, it's mostly to do with like our individual psychology, but and especially as Americans, like our American mindset is mm-hmm. that this should be a thing. Like it is exactly what we're all told should be a thing our entire lives. Like you should be able to grow up and then have the right attitude and work hard at whatever and succeed so long as you go into it thinking you will or whatever. And you put a lot of effort into it.
Right.
The pitch sounds exactly like the American dream. But you know, it's not true at all.
Yeah.
And then the reporting about that is very recent. I think, you know, this was a hard book to write because there were hardly any real sources.
Hmm.
I had to look at autobiographies a lot of people who were, you know, who ran MLMs or who were involved, do a lot of original reporting, but there aren't a lot of books out there about it. There's not a lot of scholars. It wasn't until I think like the last 8-10 years that people started reporting negatively about these companies. Occasionally one would end up in the paper for like being egregiously scammy, like, like the Holiday Magic story where that guy like put people in coffins and stuff like that one.
Oh, wow.
You know, that one gets in the paper because it's like sensational. But all the other companies that just steal your money and keep you trapped in this weird business, those don't get talked about until recently. Now we're finally doing it. And like now it gets a lot more press, but I think the brands are really good at saying, that's what differentiates us from the other ones, is they're in jail. They got in trouble. We're legal. Right. We're fine. We're a good one.
Right.
Which I don't believe should be true at all. I don't think there are good MLMs, and we can talk about that more. But
yeah,
I don't think that a good business needs to run that way.
Is Mary Kay an MLM?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mary Kay's an MLM. Tupperware is an MLM. LuLaRoe is the really famous one.
Yes,
right now.
The leggings, right?
Yes. And they got in a lot of different kinds of trouble. There were, I think, 2 television documentaries done about it. So it's, you know, things are changing and people are wanting to talk about it more. But I also don't, I know so many people who are still doing it who are just like, yeah, that one sucked. There's bad guys everywhere, you know?
Right. Right. And it's legal though, ish, because you're it's voluntary, right? Like nobody's necessarily scamming you. Like it, or is it not legal because it's actually what they tell you is not possible? Like the success that you're going to have is not possible. Explain this to me and listeners.
Well, this is a tough one because when people say it's legal, it's like that doesn't mean that anyone has certified these companies as like running in a legal manner, you know, similar right. to the second season of The Dream, we looked at supplements and like all of the vitamins and supplements at the grocery store or the drugstore, no one's actually examined those to see if they have what they say they have in them or the right amounts or anything like that. The only time that the FDA, you do have to like submit a paperwork to them, but they're not like analyzing the product.
Right.
And the only time they do step in is when someone gets sick or dies. So,
right.
Or, you know, someone makes a complaint about the lead testing that, you know, that happened right. to their kid at school or whatever. So the MLMs, I believe, operate in the same way, like quote unquote legal, but it doesn't mean they aren't doing something illegal just because they haven't been caught.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think if the FTC had enough resources to go after every MLM, they would all get shut down because none of them are operating above board. And even the rules from the FTC and from our government about like what makes an MLM quote unquote legal are so fuzzy and weird and like skirtable. And there's no regulating body for the MLM industry. Everyone does self-regulation, which is like not a thing amongst
right,
crooks.
Right. Yeah. Right. Not a thing amongst any of us. Like who's self-regulating? Okay. So dream world, somebody's read this book. What do you hope they get out of it? Like, what do you really hope is like the end? What's the end goal for this book? I mean, besides money for you.
Does that possible? Do people which make I, any money I, on books? Is that a thing? No.
Don't ask me.
Well, I did get an advance, but I got it like I signed my book contract like a couple weeks before the lockdown.
Oh.
So then I needed the money. Like I have never had a windfall actually be a windfall. I've never in my life like been like, oh, that extra money, and because it's gone immediately somehow.
Well, books are so weird because it's like you get that beginning and it's like only a quarter and you get that up front and then it's like 2 years to write and revise the book. And then by then you're in like some kind of debt because it's a full-time job to write a book. So then you get the second payment.
I had to hire people too because I already had another full-time job. So I hired help. So my second payment was gone. My first payment was mostly gone from hiring help.
Yeah. The second payment goes to cover everything that the first, like you're already in the hole. So the second payment just goes to fill up the hole. And then I don't know. I'm going to get.
Wait, are books pyramid schemes?
No. You know, I've signed 2 book contracts and I've never gotten to the second payment.
Oh, but you've taken the first one?
Yeah, because I thought I was going to write both of the books. And then I changed. The first time I got a job and couldn't write it. But the second time I just changed my mind.
But you gave it back.
You gave it back. Yeah. You told me that this was possible, that people like just don't end up writing the book. When I was feeling most insecure about my progress, you were like, oh, it takes people forever. And I was like, really? And now that I'm on the other side of it, and I say to people, it took 3 years, they're just like, oh, okay. And I'm like, what? This was supposed to take me 6 months.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. And especially male writers, like they just don't write. Like they write, have books just lingering for 10 years, like just like whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bullshit.
And they don't return advances.
No, they don't.
I've heard that.
Yeah, they don't return advances. And also just like, I'm just too good of a girl. Like my book was like in on deadline,
yeah.
You know, like within a week. And I was like, okay, but it's going to come after Labor Day. Okay.
You know? Didn't know. Yeah. I had no idea that you didn't necessarily have to follow the rules. Like, because I'm a rule follower as well. Like, I don't want to mess anything up. I don't want to upset anyone. I don't want to get on anyone's bad side. I want to overperform, underpromise, overperform, yeah. All of that stuff. And in this situation, I simply couldn't because I was like a full-time homeschool teacher all of a sudden. And I had another job and I had a company that you were there. Jen.
Yeah, I was there. I was there. We were all there. Yeah, it was brutal. But it's strange. That's a survivalist instinct. And I think that's a survivalist instinct being a good girl, because I just obviously wrote a whole book about this, but ambition and work. But I do think that there is also something that gets women into these MLMs because they want to be good girls. And they're like, well, if I just follow all of these rules, yes, then I'm going to make this money off our bone or whatever it is, you know?
Again, that attracts me a lot. Like, I look at the compensation packs, if they were understandable, and they're intentionally not. Like, these companies hire teams of lawyers to like obscure everything. But they do look like there's a formula.
Yeah.
And that appeals very much to my brain.
Yes.
And a lot of the women I've interviewed, like when I was recently with Jen Riala, who worked for Arbonne, I mean, the stacks of like materials that she had and notebooks and like charts and things, it was all very like, this seems organized. This seems like a plan. And really, it's all just to keep your brain spinning so you don't notice that you're losing money.
And they're the perfect answer for somebody who doesn't know what to do with themselves.
It's right.
Like, you just,
yes. It's all right there.
It's all right there. It makes me think so much of Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And how, because I love Shark Tank, but it is a kind of corrosive show. I mean, you see these poor people going on with these terrible ideas, 1,000 beer cozies.
Yep. Yeah.
Who've, you know, blown out their 401ks.
But that's because, again, they believe, the whole reason they're on Shark Tank is because they bought the pitch about what this country does for people. And that's what I would like people to come away from the book thinking, is a couple of things. Yeah. One, having a little more clarity around like our collective economic tail and goals at least in this country. I mean, probably worldwide, but I don't want to keep telling our kids this story. And I don't want them, and I also don't think we need to have money be like the highest goal in life. If you're not trying to be a billionaire, you're stupid. That's the story, right? And you can be a billionaire if you're smart enough about it and if you work hard enough. And I feel like that's why there's just a flood of self-help podcasts out there, this whole Andrew Huberman thing. It's all about getting wealthy and being good looking.
Yes.
And
living forever.
Sick of. Yeah. And living forever. And the other thing I would like people to take from it is just, I wrote it in a casual tone because I would like people to talk about it to each other, to their friends. Mm-hmm. I made a joke on The Daily Show, like, what can people do? I said, buy my book. But I do mean that. I mean, like, you can gift this book to someone in an MLM and maybe they'll read it and maybe they'll get some insight from it. I've heard from many, many, many people who heard the podcast and had that experience where they were like, I was feeling iffy about it for years and I didn't know why. I couldn't do a gut check with anyone else in the organization. Like, no one was having any skepticism. And then I heard your show and it let me quit, you know? So I hope it can get some people out of it. I hope it opens up a dialogue. I don't have any hope that it will do anything like grand in terms of getting rid of scammers or something. Like, that's the thing. They're just gonna get more creative, and that's their nature, and that's okay.
Let's take a quick break from some ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support for Everything Is Fine comes from Ritual. So I love Ritual. Everyone knows I love Ritual. I talk about Ritual all the time. I particularly love its daily, their daily multivitamin. And I also really have been enjoying their melatonin. But the thing I love most about Ritual is their Hyacera. It's a once daily skin supplement that's clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to a placebo. Hyacera led to 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. You can enhance your skincare routine from the inside out with one daily capsule essenced with soothing vanilla. I love Hyacera. It's been rigorously tested and validated. It's one of the industry leading sustainability. It meets all of the industry leading sustainability standards. You know, I'm a beauty editor now. I am all about keeping my face plump, and Hyacera absolutely has done that for me. I've been on it for months. I don't even know how long, and I can really see a difference in the texture of my skin. My skin looks more juicy, I guess is the best way to do it. Say it, do it. Okay, so you can start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/fine. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription to get today. That's ritual.com/fine for 25% off.
And we're back.
Jane, how hard is it for people to get out of this once they've gotten in? Is it like Scientology?
It's not that bad. They're not like secreting people away in the desert or something. But it's like, it's pretty hard. So you are told at the beginning to recruit your nearest and dearest. So you're supposed to rope in your friends and your family first. Like, why wouldn't you want to do that? Why don't you want to share this amazing opportunity with your mom? Most of the pitches I've gotten are from friends and family, obviously.
Same.
Just, you should do this because this is going to help all of us. You're playing this dual role as a perpetrator and victim. And that is such a perfect technique for a scammer to, like, implant something in your brain where, like, first you don't want to admit you've been victimized because you're not stupid. Mm-hmm. And then you can't admit that you victimize other people because you love them. And so you just stay kind of in this weird zone of feeling icky about something you're doing, but not wanting to blow your life up. And your uplines, like a lot of the people that are above you in these companies, do tell you you're going to blow your life up if you go, you know, if you leave, if you go do something else. And also, look how much money you've already invested instead of lost. Right, you know, you've already invested so much money. Why would you quit now? And, you know, they don't say the other part, which is you're never going to get any of that back. You'll never see it.
Right. Yeah. But you've talked a lot about the how much you've gotten into like psychology with this book and the psychology of loss and the sort of grief of the how we experience loss and how we can't really like why people keep doubling down with the money because they don't really want to face the loss.
A lot of it is biological and it's like survival mechanisms, right? And it's these things that we we all live in denial every day about death and sickness and all of these things. And we just kind of put blinders on in order to stay alive. And there are some parts of that that work really well for scammers.
Yeah.
One of them is, you know, we don't realize losses the same as gains. We realize them much harder. Like they're much more forceful, painful. Like they take up a lot more room in our hearts and brains than gains. So the weird thing is, I didn't understand this until I started researching this a bunch for the show and the book, but I would think that if that was the case, you know, you would quit soon, like, because it hurts. You'd get out of here because it hurts. But what really happens is you deny that you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain goes, can't be losing because this is too much. This is too much grief. This is too much to face. So we can't be losing. We're winning, actually.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like very similar to gambling addiction.
It is very similar. Although I would say at least the casinos aren't being like, you're going to come out on top if you just stick around. Like no one's telling them that. And I feel like that is the big difference is these organizations are saying there's no way you can lose. As long as you have the right attitude, you can't lose. It's not rigged. The system's not rigged. When, you know, everyone who plays the lottery understands the chances and knows that most of us lose and that it's just like something fun to do to scratch off tickets or whatever. This is not the same as that. This is like you could play this lottery and someday run the lottery and all the money in the lottery will be yours. And you're like, that's not how it works.
I want to talk about class a little bit and specifically the working class who get preyed on and scammed the most in this country, right? And
yeah.
There were people in your own family and town, the town you grew up in, who were involved in MLMs. And same with me. My mom sold living essential oils for a minute. Like, I mean, and also they're kind of good oils. Like I'm not going to lie. The Young Living Essential. But so as an interviewer, right, knowing that the audience that you have is going to be, I mean, podcast audience, let's just say they're uppity, right? And let's say this is like a working class issue. How did you think about approaching the stories of those who'd been scammed with respect and compassion? Like you wanted them to land a certain way with the audience, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, I don't want to approach those. Like I said, I've never had the thought of like, idiot, like how'd you get involved in this? You know, like, I know exactly why my family gets involved. It's because we live in like a very depressed part of the country. We're outside of Flint, Michigan. And I know that not only is it depressed and there's no money, it's fucking boring too. So these schemes offer you something to do. And that can be fun. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's stupidity or anything. So in approaching talking to people about it, people who are either in or have gotten out, I just try to relate to them and, you know, have them come across as the most human version of themselves. We've been approached a few times to do like a reality show. And I'm like, I don't know if I can participate in something like that because I don't see the generosity extending into other medium like that.
Yes.
But I try to be generous and understand that if the pitch was right, I would be there. If the pitch was true, I would be there. Also, my friends and family that I interviewed mostly, first of all, know who I am and understand that I'm going to be a rabble-rouser and like whatever, like they can take it or leave it. I've been that way my whole life. So my grandma, you know, wasn't upset about talking to me or anything that happened on the show. And then the one character there were a couple characters that like remained evil. That was kind of funny, even after I really tried to muscle them into like likable characters. But, you know, there were a few that like my friend Danielle, who is high up in 31 bags and makes $45,000 a year working like 60-hour weeks and whatever. She still thinks she's winning, you know, and it's kind of funny to listen to her. But, you know, there's a few people throughout the last few years that I've talked to where I'm like, I can't save you. You're not doing yourself any favors and I can't fix this.
But right. I'm not going to exploit you, but I can't save you. And I
from
can't,
your own
I can't,
thoughts.
Right. I can't frame this in a way. I can't change the reality of the way this content sounds.
Speaking of you being a rabble rouser, I know that, you know, we talked about how you did a season on the supplement and wellness industry. And I know you also did a season on life coaches, your most recent season. Were you always a skeptical person?
Oh gosh, I'm sure there was a moment like I think about. Yeah, I mean, when I was young, I was probably very optimistic and cheery, you know. And then trauma happens, and you start looking at the world like, yeah. Wait a minute, oh, this whole thing's bullshit. Like, this whole thing I was believing in is bullshit. We're broke. My parents don't like each other, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, some of those things just keep on piling on top of, now my mom's dating someone who's 24. Like, what the fuck is going on? Mm. Like, nothing. My dad's chewing tobacco and drinking whiskey all of a sudden. Like, what happened to the rules? Yeah. And then you start looking around at everything and you kind of see the cracks in everything. So I think, you know, it's probably trauma-based, my skepticism and my cynicism. But a lot of, I mean, I feel like a lot of journalists, people that do tell true stories, you know, have had that same experience where they're like, I want to tell true stories. I want to tell the truth about the world. Journalists and, you know, like, that's my whole career is like trying to broadcast the truth about the world.
The way you interview, because I want to go back to that for a second, you do a lot of investigative journalism and you're really great at disrupting canned narratives. Like, you're really great at sort of just mixing somebody up. I've heard you do it a million times. Where did you learn how to interview?
Ira Glass.
Mm.
Mainly. I worked there for 10 years. Ira and also Sarah Koenig, she does a specific thing that Ira really appreciates and encourages in everybody, which is to not let your subject get away with saying or doing something that sits weird with you. Like, even the tiniest thing, if you feel like, I don't know if that's true, or I don't think that's right, say it in the moment on tape. And I'm talking like, this is mostly for taped interviews because you can't go in and write everything like you can with a print piece. You can't write the thoughts that you're having afterwards. This book was hard to write because I had to keep doing that. And I wanted my subjects to do all the work because I'm used to you know, getting the tape I need and having the subjects do all the talking and but in a book you can't. So that was a really steep learning curve for me. But in my interviews, I don't let things slide by that I would be like, if you and I were at the bar, Jen, and you were telling me some story and some part didn't make sense, I'd be like, wait, back up. Huh? Wait a minute. Say more about that. What the fuck? And you would be like, okay. And you would fill in the part of the story that's missing.
Right.
You just have to do that. Trust your gut that somebody's messing with you a little bit or skipping over important information.
Are you ever nervous
Not
to do
anymore.
It? Do you ever feel...
Okay. I used to be so nervous. Oh my gosh. The whole time I was at This American Life, I was always so nervous to go out and get tape. I just felt like I was going to fail compared to all these like adult professionals around me that had real training and stuff. Like, I didn't like go to school for this hardly at all anyway. I'm an outsider.
When did you start your podcast production company? And what's the hardest thing about having your own business?
We started in 2017, and the hardest thing is we started in 2017, and then, you know, right when we were supposed to be getting good, things were supposed to be getting good money-wise, then the pandemic happens. You know, I had a couple of years run up to the pandemic, and then everything kind of shut down. So that's been very difficult. The hardest thing is, you know, first of all, realizing I'm not a manager at all. Like, I can't. The paperwork and the spreadsheets and stuff just like really overwhelms me. And it's hard, like, feeling beholden to people, feeling like you have this group of people who are relying on you. And my company is structured weird too, because a lot of what we do is based on my output. So, you know, like shows that I'm hosting or books I'm writing or whatever. And to be doing all of that and then being like, and now I have to pay payroll. And then we also have to take a gig that I don't feel proud of because it's the one that's going to pay the bills this quarter. All of that's really hard. And it's only gotten harder in podcasting. I used to, in the beginning, there was so much business going around that I could say no to things. Like, I turned down Dirty John.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't think the story was the right story to tell. And I was vindicated in that thought because I met Tara Newell, the daughter, recently, and she told me I was right. So that was good. But at their pitch, I was like, this doesn't seem centered on the women enough. And it feels weird that we're talking about this gross guy so much. Like, who gives a shit? Let's talk about these women and generational trauma. And they were like, no, we're good. So anyway, I used to be able to do that and still get good work that I felt proud of, you know, not anymore.
Yeah. Are you optimistic about the future of podcasts?
I am, only because, well, I'm optimistic about the future of podcasts if you can be flexible and like kind of roll with the changes. I don't know if I'm that person, but, you know, I also lived through, I know I only look 30. Just kidding.
You look great.
But no, I lived through the vlog, you know, boom and bust of vlogging. And I feel like I've seen enough things coming and going that, you know, podcasting is so new. It's a baby industry. It's not, it hasn't figured out what it is yet. And I think my hopes are that we're going to get to a place of differentiation where it's like, you know, moving pictures were a thing. Remember when they were moving pictures and everything was a moving picture and it was just called a moving picture. And then we did TV and then we did movies and then we did video and then we did, you know, and like things are kind of differentiating. And right now the word podcast, I feel like, is just way too broad. Like it covers so many different types of art and, you know,
totally.
It's devaluing the stuff that takes a lot of time and it's overvaluing the stuff that doesn't. And I think it'll shake out to be a little more reasonable in time.
Yeah. Speaking of your age, when you were on The Daily Show promoting your book, I found it so refreshing that in the middle of an interview, you just sort of like announced your age. You were just like, hi, I'm 46.
Like, I don't even remember what point I was making, but I was like, do you not know that I'm 46?
Like, it was great, but like, how are you feeling about getting older? I mean, this is a show about getting older.
I am more terrified of death than anything in the world. And I feel like my attitude, like, I'm 46. I'm just really trying to like fight that like in real time and say it out loud and confront it as it comes up, you know? Yeah. And take the good stuff.
Instead of hiding it.
And take the good stuff out of it that I can. I can't remember why I yelled that at that guy on The Daily Show, but I had a reason to, because I was standing up for myself about something. And I was being like, I don't think you understand how adult I am and like how many experiences I've had in life. So like looking for the positives and puffing them up a little bit is like helps me not think about this, you know, slow descent into the grave as like all bad. Also, I have completely decentered men in my life.
I was just going to get onto that in a second.
So 100%. There is no man in the center of my, there is no man. I mean, look, I have lovers and stuff, but like, that is not what I'm, and I feel
you wrote this whole essay, the scam of the soulmate, right? So like, let's talk about it, because like, I thought that was a really good essay you wrote. Everyone should go read it. I'll link it in the show notes. And it's the scam of the soulmate that this is also part, I mean, you cover scams.
It's also part of the American dream and the, what you're all supposed to accomplish with our lives is find a heterosexual relationship. Well, also then this other, I wrote it because of that Twin Flames universe doc.
Yeah. Talk about that, because I don't know if everybody knows about this. Yeah.
There's a documentary about this like cult sort of that promised people for, you know, X amount of dollars, thousands of dollars, they would find their soulmate for them and, you know, get them married and happy forever. And then it turned real weird real fast, like people having obsessive relationships and stalking and things like that, and being encouraged by the organization to like stalk harder, stalk more. And then the organization, when you know, after years they failed to match people up, decided that certain people were gay actually, and like changing their gender identity and stuff like this. Yeah, it got really, really wild. But yeah, I think, you know, it's hard for me now at this age. I have a lot of younger friends, and it's the most annoying thing to me is just how badly they want to get married.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did I show you nothing? Like, I have been divorced twice and it's been absolute hell. And you've been with me in the courtroom. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about that this is what you want to sign up for? Like, how many people have to it's fine. Go get married. Like, I've thought about doing a season about the wedding industrial complex too. And I'm like, I really can't get that mad at love. Like, I love love and I love people to be in love. And I couldn't find like a villain enough there, but I do want people to be like a little more skeptical and be a little more reasonable and thoughtful going into these decisions.
No, there's a whole section in my book, because my book's about ambition of all kinds, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. In its totality for a woman's life. And there's a whole long section about the ambition to have a relationship, yeah, to have the, that's part of like the having of it all, yeah, you know? And I love that you wrote this, because I do think, not that we shouldn't believe in love, but this, the scam of the soulmate is actually so perfect. Like that it's just that you're just going to meet the perfect person and then it's all going to fall into place. They're going to give you a ring and that's a promise for the greatest life in the world.
Yeah, you're going to have less money worries. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have more security. Yeah.
It also implies that that there's such thing as a soulmate right, and that there's, you know, yeah, and people get so caught up in that whole concept.
Where's the one? Where's the one?
The one.
I really love that I don't have that feeling anymore too.
Yeah.
And that I can tell my daughter about that there isn't one. And I used to admire so much like my old lady friends, like when I was in the middle of like feeling there was a soulmate or feeling like I'd met the person and, you know, grieving and stuff, and having my 80-year-old friends be like, shut up. This is like so far from the last person you're ever going to sleep with. Like you're insane. Even if you married him today, you would get a job in Mallorca doing some reporting and you would have a lover over there. And that's just how you do things. And I heard this from all my old lady friends and my therapist and everything. I was like, are you talking? What? That's what we do? And now I'm at that age where I'm like, oh yeah, that's what you do. You pursue your own happiness.
Yeah.
And not only in relationships, but in work too. I mean, it took me a while to stop working for men, but I did it.
Yeah.
And meaning having a boss. I do collaborations with them occasionally.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't want a man to be my boss ever again. Like that is so painful.
Ugh.
So you're kind of just over men a little bit.
Way, way. I'm way over men.
I mean, you should also say you've been engaged a couple of times,
a couple?
Too. So you did try it out.
I've been married twice and engaged like five times, I think. So,
oh
I
my
know.
God.
What?
Hysterical. Yeah. No, it's hysterical.
There was a New York Times article about women going, like, dropping their last names. And I changed my name a bunch because I was married a bunch. But then I was like, no, I'm just going to go by Jane Marie, which is my name. And in the New York Times article, they put a picture of me, a picture of Elizabeth Taylor and Madonna. And I was like, how dare you?
I hope you saved that.
I did. It was really funny. I was like, oh, yikes. All right.
I don't know.
I really like jewelry okay. a lot. Like, yes. I like gold and diamond jewelry. So
look, I love that you treated it like an investigative reported piece. Like you were like, I'm gonna try as many times as I can, and now the results are
to get this thing that everybody said that I can get. And it's like, no.
Exactly.
They're all just people and they're dudes. Like, woof, you know? I don't know. Anyway,
I know. Some people like them. I mean, mine's fine, but like, you know,
some people
it's
really
like
them, but I don't, I feel, So again, I don't know why I would be weird about saying my age. Like, the only reason I would ever feel weird about that, I guess, would be because, like I don't want men to know or something, but I don't. Also, everyone's going to find out how old you are. There's the internet. Like,
well. That's the thing. I mean, I started this new column at my new mm-hmm. job that says in the headline, I'm 50 and test skincare for a living. Here's what I recommend, right? And I will tell you, it's performing very well, right? But I will tell you that the gasps from the staff of like, cause 50 to like a 25-year-old, I might as well be 90. Like they don't
I look
like
back on like how old I was the last time I got married. I was 35, I think, or something. And I'm like, oh, she was such a baby. She was a tiny baby. Why was she in such a rush?
Wow.
Why was she in such a rush? I don't even remember being 26 and getting married. Like, where was my head at? What was I could have been doing so much other cool stuff.
I know. I was 21. I know.
I look at pictures of myself when I was that young and I think, God, you were so cute. It's so bad you were a fucking idiot.
I totally agree. I look at those pictures too and I'm like, what in the hell was I thinking? I hated myself. I only wanted a boy to like me.
Yes.
And now I'm completely the opposite. I think I'm rad. I don't care if they like me. I would still like to have sex. That's fun.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm too old to think I'm going to get anything from it, kind of, you know, like I'm hustling to take care of my own life and my child and my home. What would the point be? Like, what else do I really need?
Yeah. What would you do if your daughter was just very, what if you would do if your daughter wanted to get married young?
She will. She's one of us, you know, she will. My mom got married at 17.
Right.
Same. I don't think there's much like I can do to deprogram that for her. I think it's probably a lot of it's biological and stuff. I mean, I am surprised that she is already approaching 11 years old and is not nearly as like sneaky and bad and boy crazy as I was. So that's great.
Yeah.
But maybe she will. And I think, I don't know. I'm going to try to handle her decisions the way I handle them now, which is just like, I can give you my knowledge and go biff on your face, dude, if you want.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
Yeah. Right. No, because you have to learn your own things. Wait, do you miss your life coach? This is another question I had.
I don't miss her because I know her and we're friends.
Okay.
But I miss having someone. I know.
But she's not coaching you. So tell about your life coach experience. This is a really good, the season 3 of The Dream is really, really good and goes in some really strange places. I really loved it. So wait, tell about the life coaching.
So I was super depressed coming out of the pandemic and going into perimenopause and having a really tough time getting that diagnosed and having a uterine fibroid. There were just so many things piling on top of each other that just made me miserable. And I was still going to my therapist, who I love, and I will never quit going to her, but I just felt like I needed someone to tell me like what time to wake up in the morning and like come over and tell me to move my body or come over and give me a protein shake or something.
Yeah.
Because I just couldn't take care of myself in a way. Like I wasn't prioritizing my own health or happiness or anything. So I hired this woman, Jessie Monroy, and she runs it's called like wellness something coaching. I don't know.
Happy for life.
Yeah, happy forever coaching. But no, she's this, she's from El Salvador and she's like very hot and very cool, like really cool. And she dresses cool and she wears cool jewelry and stuff. So I was like, this is not what I'd been picturing for a life coach, which was just Gwyneth Paltrow and her friends.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Jessie's a real person. And she came to my house twice a week for 6 months and whooped my ass into shape, not exercise wise, but like taking care of myself wise. Like she made me get my fibroid removed. She like stood with me while I was like fighting with insurance and stuff about my hormones and trying to get my perimenopause resolved and taught me, you know, things to eat that would be almost like Taco Bell or whatever, because that's my favorite food.
Right. Because you were a big fast food person before perimenopause just fucked up your life. Yeah.
So now I'm not doing that. I'm eating much healthier. I still hate exercise. I think I'm allergic to exercise. I don't know. But so I do miss that part of it, that she would like make me move my body more. But now I'm thinking I can just solve that with like booty calls, but we'll see. I don't know. Like,
what do you still want to do, Jane, before we go?
You mean in work and life?
In life. What do you want for the rest of your life? The second half. Prime
time. Oh my God. I can't wait for my kid to go away to school or band tour or whatever she's going to do. Take her gap year with her own money. I am going to get a studio apartment. Okay. If I have enough money, knock on wood.
Yes.
If I have enough money, I want a studio apartment in South Beach and a studio apartment in the Lower East Side in Manhattan. That's all I want. Tiny, tiny, tiny. I don't care. It can, like the tiniest box.
A Murphy bed.
Studios, two of them. One at the beach and one in downtown Manhattan. And that's all I need.
Perfect.
I wouldn't mind a cabin in the woods somewhere too, but like
I can't get greedy.
No, I just want the two studio apartments. I want to spend less than I'm spending right now on housing. And I don't know. I do need to think of something besides podcasting just in case, you know, my style of podcasting keeps going out of favor. We'll see.
You know what? You're going to write more books if you want to. Probably. You can. This was a good book.
I should write a memoir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we will have many conversations about that. I love you. You're the best.
Oh, no, you're the best. I can't wait for you to be on Dear Jane Marie in the next couple of weeks. People, come on. We're talking about makeup and stuff.
I can't either. And also, everybody find Jane at what? JaneMarie.com?
It's Jane-Marie.com, but you can also find me on all the socials at C Jane Marie, which is a reference no one gets anymore, but it's like C Jane Run, like S-E-E.
Oh.
But the kids don't know those books anymore.
No.
Anyway, S-E-E, January.
And buy Jane's book. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Jane.
My pleasure. This was really fun. I want to come back and talk more about being old ladies.
Oh, 100%. Anytime. Thanks for listening to Everything is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it across the platforms, especially on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show and it makes the world of difference. If you want to support the production of the show so we can pay our editor, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. It's $3 a month. It really helps us out. If you want to follow Kim, you can find Kim on her Substack, kimfrance.substack.com. You can find me on my Substack, jenromolini.substack.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're at EIF Podcast on Instagram. I got into our account. We can follow us on Facebook. We have a robust and private Facebook group. The show is mixed and edited by the spectacular Natalie Rivera, who makes us sound like we care about sound quality in a way we never could ourselves. Natalie, you make this show great. Thank you for all you do. And we'll be back next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.